This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey, Stackers, becoming a member at Navy Federal Credit Union could help you earn more and save more. Their certificate options could earn you more than your standard savings accounts with competitive rates. Not all financial institutions offer you as many choices for savings options as Navy Federal does. For example, you could start your savings journey with a low minimum deposit, add money at any time, and watch your savings grow. Thanks to flexible terms, you can use Navy Federal's savings options for all kinds of goals, short or long term. Considering a big home improvement project? Maybe you want to consolidate debt? You could borrow up to 100% of your home's equity, with a fixed rate home equity loan with zero closing costs, or easily borrow as you go with a home equity line of credit. Both options could help make life's big expenses seem more manageable. To learn more, visit NavyFederal.org. At Navy Federal, our members are the mission. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender. Membership required. Terms and conditions apply. Loans subject to approval.
Hey, guys. I woke up sexy as hell again.
Don't you hate when that happens?
For people that don't have the video, that's my mug. Woke up sexy. I have to remind myself of that. Oh, yeah. I'm sexy as hell. What's yours, OG? I do something called whatever the something I want. That's a good lesson.
I'm holding a big mug and nothing today because I've been up for 4 hours and I've already had all the coffee that is available in the house.
Oh, gee, I can't wait for this.
Oh, I'm
he already
amped.
Drank all the coffee.
Time for him to crash.
I'm ready to go.
That's right. Before he does, let's raise those mugs, or in Doug's case, the fake mug, because on every Monday, Stackers, we salute those people that kept us safe all weekend. Thanks to our troops. Here's to our troops on behalf of the men and women at Navy Federal Credit Union. And the men and women making podcasts at Mom's Basement. And heck, hopefully all the people listening to people who make podcasts in Mom's Basement. What? Here's to our troops. Let's go stack some Benjamins together.
I'm confused.
Hoorah.
I'm just including our stacker friends in this salute.
People who are listening to the people who are thinking about listening to the...
Or is it, remember the eagle on the Muppets? This is a salute to the world, but mostly America.
I don't remember that. That's awesome.
I don't remember that.
The Grumpy Eagle is kind of the avatar for OG. I like that. It's just always got that scowl on his face.
I don't even know what you're talking about.
I apologize. Now, where was I? Yes, safety instructions. First, when entering the theater, please move as far to the end of the row as possible. Stopping in the middle is distinctly unpatriotic.
Live from Joe's mom's basement, it's the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. Have you ever thought about writing a best-selling crime novel? What if it were based on financial crime? Better yet, what if you wrote it after your first career were over and you were doing it during your, quote, retirement? Well, take notes, because today we're talking all things retirement, crime, and fiction with author Michael Balter. In our headlines, Lowe's has a new credit card. So does Robinhood. Is this the first sign of the apocalypse? We'll talk credit, your wallet, and maybe legalized credit card scams. Plus, we'll answer a question from a stacker who said, I'd better call Saul. See hi and OG. And I'll share some taxing trivia. And now, two guys who were once in the running to appear on The Penny, it's Joe and O-J-J-J-J-G.
I think they should change The Penny. Should change it to be you and I, OG. Wouldn't we look good on the front of a penny?
No.
No?
It's a big risk, right? If they take the wrong silhouette, you're like etched in time forever.
You're like, they did my bad side.
Oh, come on.
That's the side with the mole on it.
Golly.
If I had a nickel for everybody who said I should be on the penny. It is the Stacky Benjamin Show. It is Monday. We're so happy you're here. We've got an hour of just great money lessons. And the biggest lesson, I think, of all, and Doug, you alluded to it, was, you know, we talk about it's not running to something when you retire. I said that backwards. It's not about what you're going to do later. It's about getting the hell away from the thing you're doing now. Like, that's just that's probably wrong.
Squirrel.
It's about running to something, not from something. And today's guest wrote an award-winning, fantastic crime novel. I'm now about halfway through it. And Doug, you've read this thing cover to cover.
So good. So good.
It is fantastic. But it's not even about the story.
I read it
story.
In two sittings.
Two sittings.
It just pulled you in. Yeah, just two sittings.
Yep. OG, he read all 11 pages of this book in two sittings.
And there were no pictures in this book. I kept flipping pages like, there's got to be some pictures coming up.
It might be slightly longer than 11 pages. But the fact that Michael left a full-time career and decided, I'm going to write a novel, and spent not just time, energy, research. We're going to talk about just the idea of retiring to something with today's guest, Michael Balter. But before that, Wild and Woolly headline. How are you, Mr. OG?
Pretty good. This is the weekend after the Masters. So just spent 4 days sitting on my behind in front of the TV. Which was, pretty good.
How much money did you lose betting on John Daly this year?
At 10,000 to one, you just got to take a swing every so often. Like, literally go, it's only a dollar.
He can roll up in his party van and qualify this year.
He might be able to string together four straight rounds of 68.
In the spirit of that, and also in the spirit of it's only a dollar, I'm hoping people are thinking this is only 2 minutes. Because we need to keep the podcast free. So before we start, got a couple sponsors that support the show. So keep it rolling, people. Thank you.
Baby needs a new pair of shoes.
This episode is sponsored by State Farm. You a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Well, look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers. They're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
Hey there, everybody. Want to give a shout out to all of our service members and their families for keeping us safe, both here and abroad. And thank you so much to the family members who hold the fort down. Thank you for keeping us safe here in America and all of our interests overseas as well. You know, this is Military Appreciation Month, and Navy Federal Credit Union wants to celebrate their members who go above and beyond. They offer member-only exclusive rates, discounts, and tools to help empower their members to help them reach their goals. Here's one of our offers in honor of Military Appreciation Month. Join and get $50 when you open a credit card. Here's the disclaimer. You got to join and open your membership savings account between May 1st and May 31st. The annual percentage yield is 0.25% for membership savings accounts, $5 minimum balance to open. You got to maintain the membership savings account to obtain the bonus. Check all this out at NavyFederal.org for full terms and conditions. Visit NavyFederal.org/celebrate to see all the Military Appreciation Month offers and other Navy Federal offers. Navy Federal is insured by NCUA, Equal Housing Lender.
And now we're ready to start this mission. Michael Balter waiting in the wings. So let's get our headline rolling.
Hello, darlings. And now it's time for your favorite part of the show, our Stacking Benjamin's headlines.
This headline stopped me. A company decided, OG, that even with all these new late fees that we talked about just a couple weeks ago, we're going to find a different way to make money. It's almost like you're the Oracle of Delphi. And I'm not talking the automotive company. You're the Oracle who called this. the credit cards might find a different way to get stuff done. In this case, the company seriously laying down the lumber. Lowe's credit card now has no anything.
Keep going.
Laying down the lumber.
Yeah, we got it.
Now has a 31.99% interest rates. Customers, and this is going to come as a shock, call it loan sharking.
How about Lowe's sharking? Oh.
See, Joe, that's how it's done right there.
Yeah. 32%.
32%. That's
impressive.
It's like a payday advance. Like those places that were
it was just outlawed. A tube of cock, for God's sake.
You got to put it on Klarna and have 87 payments for your cock.
I was going to say, 40 with only 480 payments of $1.75, this cock could be yours. I guess we shouldn't say cock because it's not too much.
We got to be careful with
like
that
cock.
Word. Yes. Vanessa Wong wrote this piece. Vanessa writes that when John Gavea needed a new washer and dryer in September 2021, oh boy, a new washer and dryer at 32%, he signed up for a Lowe's credit card. The card's annual percent rate at the time was, you know, it was only 26.99.
Yeah, much more reasonable.
Run of the mill. Oh,
totally. Quote, I realized that 26.99 is ridiculous, but we definitely need the washer and dryer, Gavea told MarketWatch. And cardholders get a discount on their purchase, he said. Later on, when he needed a freezer, he also put that on his Lowe's card. Gavea, 68 years old from North Carolina, said the monthly payments were manageable, but the interest rates steadily rose. He carries a balance on the card, but quote, I've never been late on anything. I've been an excellent payer since 2021. In fact, his credit score, 760. Excellent on-time payment history. He got a notice that the APR on his Lowe's card recently was going to be going to 31.99. So he called the number on the card and tried to negotiate a lower rate. And you guys know what happened. They said, nay, nay.
Come on.
Weird.
They're going to find a way. Oh, gee. Yeah. They will find a way to get the money back.
I was just thinking about like what to say about this besides don't do that if you can avoid it. I mean, he's talking about, you know, he said, well, we needed a new washer and dryer. And that's probably true. We had a situation here at our house where our washer took a crap and then we fixed it for $500 and then it took another crap. And the guy came out and he says, listen, it's a $1,500 fix. You should just buy a new one because they're less than $1,500. Like the way the parts are and technology, it's not made to be this 20-year machine anymore. It's a plastic thing with technology in it and the circuit boards take a crap and whatever. But I was surprised at the wider range of price points, right? You could spend $500 for one, or you could spend $3,500 for one. I guess what I'm thinking about here is there's times and circumstances where you know, need a washer and dryer, right? You're like, this one's broken. We have to have a new one. And then you get to the store and there's so many different choices. And, you know, is the right thing to say, like, I'm just going to buy the cheapest one because that's like, that's fits the need. It literally only washes clothes. It doesn't, you know, do anything else like all the other bells and whistles. I think that's the piece here. It's like if you fall into the, well, I absolutely need to have this, I think you have to really kind of go bare bones base model as much as you can without any of the frills, because if you got to charge it and God forbid have to pay interest on it, you're going to be paying on this a while.
Yeah, let's go through. I feel bad for Gavea because, you know, he's looking at his credit score. I think first of all, gee, that's the wrong thing to look at. I've got a great credit score. Well, you're still paying 26.99, even on that first card. I don't want to have a great credit score as much as I want to have the emergency fund.
Yeah.
And not use the credit at all.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, if possible. Now, the other thing that he could do here, of course, is find a 0% rate or a low balance transfer rate to transfer this to, because his score is high, because he has a good payment history and presumably isn't maxing out the Lowe's credit card. Lowe's, by the way, is known for doling out huge lines of credit. So if you're like complete sidebar, if you're working on building your credit, one of the angles of the axe associated with credit score is utilization. How much of your available credit are you using? And that counts for 35% of your credit score. If you have the ability to get a Lowe's card in very short order, you can increase the available credit on that thing. If you can trust yourself, this isn't rookie moves here, yeah. but you can make that credit card limit like $20,000, $30,000, $40,000. and you go, what the heck? I would never use that at Lowe's. That's okay. When you're thinking about building your credit, all that matters is that denominator of how much do you have?
How much are you using?
Yeah. How much you have access to and how much you're using. If you've got a credit card that has a $5,000 limit and you always have a $3,000 balance, even if you pay it off, you use $3,000 and pay it off, according to the credit score people, you're using 60% of your available credit. That looks like crap. Even if you pay it off, you have perfect payment history, you pay no interest, that's a crappy part of your credit score. Instead, have $50,000 of available credit, even if you're not going to use any of it, still charge your $3,000. Now you're using less than 10% of your credit.
Yeah, I think that's an important lesson for a lot of people. Don't know that that is a major factor in credit scores and you know, getting approval for more credit. So I'm glad you explained that. But when was the last time when a store credit card was the cheapest option to get money? Right, yeah. You're purchasing money. It's never ever been the cheapest option.
Yeah, and Lowe's isn't a bank. Bank of America is a bank.
Right. They're like not the first middleman. They're at least the second middleman. So everybody's got to make profit through that whole chain of the loan. And so, yeah, anytime a store credit card is being offered, it's never the cheapest option. If this person had a 760 credit rating, not bad, means they've got other credit cards. Okay, understand there are times when a lot of people don't have the emergency fund they should have, Joe. Of course, that's always the first line of defense. But in lieu of that, at least make the effort to go look for the cheapest source of money you can. And it's probably one of the credit cards already in your pocket versus a store card.
I think the store card can be cheap.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, it says it right here in the piece. He scored a discount because he used the store card. If we want to play the game, which is what the credit card hacking community does, right? He opens the store credit card, he gets the discount, and then we do what OG says. Then we look for a different line of credit at a lower interest rate, and we transfer it immediately, knowing this is the evil empire. I think there's a bigger problem, though, which is the whole idea of know yourself. You know, I mean, for some people, opening up this huge line of credit through Lowe's and not using it is great. But there's a bunch of people that if I've got plastic in my wallet, all of a sudden I find an emergency where that has to.
They have M&Ms at Lowe's, right?
Yes, right.
They do.
That has to be accessed. And I was there. I remember having those feelings. I'm like, ooh, I got a gas card. I think it's time to go to Sunoco. You know, time for more pork rinds.
Sunoco.
Yeah. Clark. Mine was Clark. Clark gas station. $200 limit. It was awesome.
We're laughing, but this is how they get people, right? And to your point, Lowe's is, by the way, not even the credit card issuer. It's a company called Synchrony. And of course, Reddit users complaining about the recent rate hikes on social media. One Reddit user described the increased APR as, quote, loan shark rates. Totally true. Predatory as hell, another wrote. They've also been objecting to, and another way, OG, they're clawing this money back as the government decides we're gonna make sure that you don't pay these stupid late pay fees. We're gonna find another way. Now it's $1.99 fee if you want your bill on paper. If you want paper,
oh really?
We'd happily do it. We're gonna give you that. What's a stamp now? I'm not old enough to know what a stamp is.
It just says forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not old enough to know.
The government figured that out too. Like if we don't put the price on there, then they'll never complain.
That's it. And Lowe's took a page, apparently, out of their playbook. If we don't write the $1.99 anywhere.
Yeah.
But more good news, though, in credit card land. They're not the only one with the new credit card. Robinhood, OG. Robinhood, by the way, I don't know if I didn't realize this or I wasn't paying attention. You know, Robinhood's ticker symbol is HOOD, is hood. Which is what the robber pulls down when they are taking away all your money.
Like mask, you know,
it should be like mask. Robinhood, ticker symbol, hold up.
Is there an apostrophe before hood?
It's so amazing. And you'd be like, I love Robinhood. No, what did they do bad? Well, Robinhood still trying to increase the disguises that helps them prove that they're awful company. Yeah, more smoke, more mirrors. Robinhood wants to be, quote, a one-stop shop. Of course they do. If I could steal your hubcaps and your front grill and the radiator
and your sense of self-worth.
Let's get all of it. They want to be a one-stop shop with its new credit card. Is the Robinhood Gold Card a good deal? This also from MarketWatch. Andrew Keschner and Hannah Aaron Lang wrote this. Robinhood was once an upstart brokerage platform giving investment powerhouses a run for their money by appealing to a new generation of traders and investors. There's so much hilarious about that one sentence.
Yeah. Schwab is really shaking in their boots over Robinhood, but go on.
But also, we couldn't get anybody who knew what they were doing, so we went for the new generation because we could fool them. Now the financial services company is continuing its bid to become an integral part of the money decision of its users by rolling out its own credit card. This is there's that joke, Doug, that Jim Gaffigan does. You know, this whole water thing, it's a scam. You know where they get you? You got to buy the tray.
Yeah.
The water's free.
There's a recipe
free.
For ice on the back of this.
Their water's for free, but if you want to make ice, you got to buy the tray. That's where
they get you. That's how they get you.
But this is where they get you. I have an Xbox, and if you want to communicate on the Xbox with anybody, play a game with anybody, you have to buy their upcharge, right? And then when you realize that your PC will connect with the Xbox, and hey, you can start a game on the Xbox, and then you can play it on your PC. And oh, by the way, we're going to make this Netflix-ish, no longer buy games. We're going to make it so everybody's creating their ecosystem. Apple has their ecosystem. I'm in hell because I'm stuck between both of these ecosystems, right? Netflix wants to have their ecosystem. Amazon with their ecosystem. Robinhood OG is just doing the thing that Professor Scott Galloway talks about. Just making sure that we capture all the money, all of it.
Again, back to what I said earlier, this is going to be something I don't have much to say about because this is a bad idea.
So in the open, Joe, I said legalized scams. Right?
Yeah.
Like, is it really a scam or is it just like, this is not the greatest way to manage your money?
Well, I think that that's a great question. So if I'm buying an Xbox, I mean, I'm going to use the Xbox analogy, not the Robin, because people have heard me beat up on Robin Hood, but let's use the Xbox analogy because
I
like Xbox.
You occasionally play.
Every once in a while, I partake.
I don't inhale, so it's totally okay.
Never once. I turn it on, but I never play the games. Mm-hmm. When you buy the Xbox, you think you're buying this piece of hardware. You're not buying the piece of hardware. If I buy the Robinhood Gold Card, I'm not buying the Robinhood Gold Card. I'm further into the ecosystem, and they're going to give me more privileges if I use the Gold Card in conjunction with their other offerings. The second on Xbox that I buy the Xbox, if I want to play any game with OG or Doug, if we want to get on and play golf together like we have in the past, I've got to buy the chat channel that comes with it if I want the ability to play multiplayer games at all. And then if I'm going to play three or four games, hey, you know what? So I'm buying then the ability to pay them even more money. And I think all this Gold Card does, you know, it goes into this. The Gold Card's, by the way, doesn't look bad. It's actually, it gives 3% cash back on all spending categories. I remember we started working with Magnify Money, Nick Clements, who was an industry insider, worked with Citi and with Barclay. Nick said, if you get anything over 2, you're doing well. This is 50% higher than 2. So is the card good? Yes. But it's never OG in any of these. We just did a show about gotchas recently, right? The financial gotchas a couple weeks ago. We'll link to that. Because I thought with you, Roger Whitney, and Shauna Game, the three of you did a great job of talking about the fact that it isn't what's being said. This is a great card. It's what they're not saying. Like, I think as humans, we're really good at knowing, no, my BS meter's there. But we're not good at catching what is not being said, which is what they're luring you to is a crappy product.
And this gets back to each individual piece of your financial puzzle. Does it make sense to really hyper optimize or try to each specific thing? You know, you might look at a credit card and say, well, if I have this and I spend in these categories, then I'm going to get this amount of reward or cash or whatever. That's 50% better than this. You know what I mean? You can spend lots and lots and lots of time and then not pay attention to your point. You're not paying attention to the $1.99 fee that wipes this all out, or the fact that you have a balance which charges you interest, which wipes all this out, or that the rewards platform only sends the cash to, you know, this bank, which is a crappy interest. You know what I mean? Like, versus simplifying your life and having, you know, as much as you possibly can kind of simple, and then finding out what's the lever that's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. You know what I mean? Like, that's mostly around spending energy on your savings, spending money on your income, spending money on your personal development and personal utility. There's one piece that I agree with Dave Ramsey, is that there's never been anybody who's gotten rich on credit card points. That's a perk. I'm certainly happy that I have a crap load of Marriott points and a crap load of Amex points and all these other ones that when we go somewhere, I can just go, I don't, you know, just pay with points, like, you know, and not really have to think about it. But that's not why people are going to be financially successful.
No. And I think that's if we think order of operations, I think that, that's why we start with what ecosystem do I want to be in? So I hear stuff about Vanguard. Okay, go to the Vanguard website. You know, the great thing about Vanguard, very low fees. The thing everybody complains about most loudly, Mindy Jensen over at Bigger Pockets, our friend Mindy, complains about that website and that customer experience sucks. But if you appreciate super low fees, you're going to go to Vanguard. Okay, well, I want to moderate that a little bit. Then go look at Fidelity. Go look at Schwab. But I don't think you start with, hey, Robinhood has this sweet-ass credit card. The brokerage service stinks. The tools are horrible. They're known for ripping you off. They've done it over and over again.
But I'm getting 5% of my cash back.
Right, exactly.
But you only spend $8,000 a year on your credit card. Like, that's $40, you know, or $400. It's like, that's not going to move the needle.
Yeah. Who's going to be your partner? What brokerage firm are you going to work with? And then I think use all the perks. Like, hey, if you've decided, no matter everything that we said, that you love Robinhood, this is a pretty damn good credit card. I'm in that ecosystem. Take advantage of that credit card. If that helps you, then that's great. But I don't think we start here.
I don't think you spend really any energy there, honestly, because the end result is a fairly insignificant move, the needle. It's all downside. You know what I mean? Like, back to the Lowe's thing. Yeah, you can get 3% cash back and that's fantastic. But if they're charging you above average interest and you happen to carry a balance, I would rather get no cash back and a competitive interest rate and be okay with the fact that for whatever reason, I got to carry a balance on my credit card because I'm like the average American and I do, then the points don't matter. You know, you need to probably have a freaking credit union credit card that's going to charge you 7 or 8% interest with no perks of any kind and a really crappy limit.
Yeah.
Because that's going to pay off way more than the fact that you get double X points if you use this travel service to book your flight through, you know, whatever, blah, 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 blah.
There it is. That's the place. That's the place to start. That definitely is the order. What ecosystem? What am I trying to do? Be the CFO of your situation. Forget about the points. Coming up next, Michael Balter is a guy who worked a full-time career in finance. We're going to dive into his career and how he got into writing, which was not what he did originally. Had nothing to do, in fact, with the amazing career that this gentleman had. Now, his brand new book, Chasing Money, winner of 2 book awards. And for a guy who's retired, living in Northern Michigan, having his best life writing, just it's an amazing story. And we're super excited to talk to Michael Balter. Also, you know, we talk to a lot of authors. We don't talk fiction. That's going to be some fun on today's show. But first, something else that's always fun every Monday, Wednesday, Friday. Our friend Doug's got some trivia. Doug, what are we talking about today? It's April 15th. I don't think there's what could be going on in April. I can't believe it's April 15th and we haven't talked about any of the big things that might be going on.
Yeah, I don't, Joe, we do a lot of trivia here based on the date that the episode, you know, airs, but I couldn't find anything significant that's tied to April 15th. There's like nothing. I'm just Googling and searching. There's no holidays. No one ever said, beware the Ides of April. I mean, they could, though. It's a pretty unlucky day for presidents. Abraham Lincoln was assassinated on April 15th. You know, it's also pretty unlucky for anyone floating out to sea in a giant watercraft that's famously unequipped to handle a catastrophe hitting ice cubes. Although we might be in the clear now, I doubt the Titanic's going to sink again.
Wow.
Other than the, yeah, Other than those two things, April 15th. Was it too soon?
Yeah, it's never too soon for a Titanic joke.
Other than those two things, April 15th has been pretty chill day, you know, historically.
Chill?
Nothing. Yeah, see what I did there? Nothing ever bad ever happens on this particular day. Hey, speaking of Lincoln, only 5 months after his inauguration, he signed the Revenue Act of 1861, which imposed the first ever federal income tax. He barely had time to break in his new desk at the White House, and he's already jacking up the prices. Who does he think he was? Like the landlord of the United States? Today's trivia question is, why did President Lincoln impose the first federal income tax? I'll be back right after I show Joe's mom my new stovepipe hat. This might be my new look. Hey, they're right. Mom, they're right. Black really is a slimming color.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Well, don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment's the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns, meaning when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal, rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money's breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money in the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications through LifeMD? LifeMD is now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s, the breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
Probably the easiest thing I've ever done. The medication comes in the mail and it's very easy to use. I've been able to live my normal lifestyle and I've lost 20 pounds already and I've never felt better. It changed my life.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Prescription products require completion of an online medication consultation with an independent healthcare provider through the LifeMD platform and are only available if prescribed. Subscription required. Individual results may vary. Additional restrictions apply at LifeMD.com. Read all warnings before using GLP-1s. Side effects may include a risk of thyroid C-cell tumors. Do not use GLP-1s if you or your family have a history of thyroid cancer.
If you've struggled for years to lose weight and have given up hope, did you know you can now access GLP-1 prescription medications at TryLifeMD.com? We're now offering eligible patients online access to GLP-1s. The breakthrough prescription medication that can help you lose body fat and weight. Listen to what people are saying.
It's fun to put on jeans that you couldn't get into 6 months ago.
Every morning, I look forward to getting on the scale.
For anybody who's struggling with their weight, it's a godsend.
And here's the best part. Your insurance may cover 100% of the cost of your medication. So go to TryLifeMD.com to have your eligibility checked right now. Get started today at TryLifeMD.com. That's TryLifeMD.com.
Hey there, stackers. I'm Chapeau model and guy who definitely would have kicked Rose off that floating door in the North Atlantic, Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug. In 1913, the 16th Amendment was added to the Constitution to enshrine Congress's right to collect a federal income tax without having to base it on the population. With nearly four times as many people living in the U.S. now than did at that time, it sounds like the amendment set us up for a pretty good deal. I think. Wait. Hey, somebody do the math on that. Today's trivia question is, why did President Lincoln impose a federal income tax? The answer? With the Civil War having broken out just a month after he was inaugurated, President Lincoln needed a way to fund the war without bankrupting the country, and so he enacted a 3% tax on all income over $800, which is equal to roughly $23,000 in today's money. Wait, I thought the Civil Wars were a band. You mean this whole time it was also an event? As always, kids, you learn something new from Doug's Trivia. Sometimes I'm learning right there with you. And now, here to teach you how to grab retirement and create some magic, in his case, an award-winning fiction crime novel, it's today's mentor, Michael Balter.
And I'm super happy we have him here for the world tour in Mom's Basement. Michael Balter's here. How are you?
I'm fine. Thank you for having me, Joe.
Well, I'm super happy you're here. Although whenever somebody comes up with this twisted stuff, as you've come up with in your new book, Chasing Money, I just kind of wonder where that all comes from. And actually, this book starts off with really high stakes, and these people are running a company. And I want to talk about that for a second. This idea of running a startup, of being an entrepreneur, that piece is autobiographical to you.
Oh, absolutely. A little bit of background. I started my career a long time ago, and I went to work for Intel Corporation when it was still a small company. I think when I went to work for them, they had about 500 employees. In fact, side note, just before I interviewed with them, I interviewed with an even smaller company. They had about 100 employees, and I figured they were never going to make it. And they had a really funny name. I think it was called Apple.
Oh, no.
So I went to work for Intel, was a technologist for 20 years, and got the entrepreneurial bug and left the company in the late 90s for a startup, which after a year crashed and burned. Actually, we were about 2 weeks from going public and we literally imploded.
Oh.
Yeah. And so I then kind of got the entrepreneurial bug and ended up spending the second 20 years of my career being an entrepreneur and starting multiple different companies. And you're right, it's a real grind, and it's also a great challenge in many ways.
Well, we follow these two guys, Marty and Bo, and they have this company that they're trying to get funding for. And what's wild to me, Michael, you know, and most of our stackers, they work for somebody else, but a lot of them are thinking like you did when you were with Intel, hey, what if I went out on my own? Like, how great would this be? I could have the freedom to do what I want. I could do all these fascinating things. But there's also a family attached, right? What did your wife say when you said, I'm going to leave this company called Intel, which is booming in the late 90s, and I'm going to go start my own thing? How did the two of you come together on that?
So my advice to any of your audience who want to become entrepreneurs, either male or female, they need two things. One, they need to make sure that their spouse has an awful lot of patience. And two, they need to make sure that their spouse is earning a living. Because if you suddenly end up being an entrepreneur, you're going to find yourself going months at a time without contributing to the household finances. And if your spouse can't help, then you're in trouble. I was very lucky because, as I said, I became an entrepreneur after already having been with Intel for quite a number of years. I did quite well there. And so for a while, anyways, until Intel crashed in terms of stock valuation, it went from $75 down to about $13.
That was 2002, right? The 2000 to 2002 wreck.
Yeah. And of course, I'd been with Intel for so long, I didn't diversify. I fell in love with the company, right? I fell in love with the stock. It's a lesson I learned that I'm never going to do again. So I watched it just go down. I'd never got out of it. I stayed with it because I always thought it was going to come back, and ended up losing about 80% of my retirement. And so my wife is looking at me and I'm looking at her and we're saying, oh, I got to go back to work. Yeah, you do. So if you're going to become an entrepreneur, my wife went back to work as well. And during the rough years when things were tough and I didn't collect a paycheck, she was able to keep everything going. And she was very patient with me. She's a great sport about that.
Well, and that's what's interesting here in Chasing Money. And we're going to talk about, for people that want to write a book, actually you going through and writing this. But in chapter two, we get a glimpse into one of the main character, Marty's households, and his spouse. You do a great job, Michael, of making her seem charming and seeming like somebody with the patience of Job. She's already been through one startup that didn't succeed, and now it seems like they're on startup number two that clearly is crashing, and she's completely had enough. And I think you do a great job of making it that it isn't that she's not patient. It's that you can only be patient for so long. This woman, Michael's been patient forever, and she's just seeing the writing on the wall that this seems to be going nowhere.
Right. So in the book, although I draw a lot of my characters are from people that I know or that I met, and obviously Abby, the Marty's wife, is very concerned at this point and is trying to do things to try to get him out of being an entrepreneur. She wants him to go back to work and make a regular income and not go through these periods of financial drought. And so now in real life, that never happened to me. And I was, as I said, I was very fortunate, but I needed and wanted the tension in the book. And so I made Abby a little bit more concerned about their financial situation.
Oh yeah, she is done. And what I like is you draw this out. Once again, everybody, I'm not going to give away the book, but we're just going to talk about the first three chapters here. So we're going to give you just some little cues here. There's going to be plenty of chasing money for people that want to read the whole thing. But early on, you have that you draw up her frustration when she stops at, I think, Michael, it's a gas station, and her credit card gets declined.
Yes.
And it's in front of friends of hers because they live in this small town and everybody knows everybody. And so she's got that embarrassment. I've lived through that too. That was.
I have too. That's why that's actually something that happened. That's why I put that in.
It's horrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's embarrassing as heck.
Absolutely horrifying. And it could be a million different things that happen. It's funny. When I was a financial planner, Michael, I took clients to dinner. And the waiter walked up to the table with me and these high net worth clients and said, "Sir, your card's been declined." Great.
Oh,
fantastic. And for people that haven't read my book, Stacked, this is back when my money was, I was actually at that point, frankly, getting my act together. And it was my debit card, which brings up something else. She then goes to her debit card. The debit card goes through, but Marty knows there's no money in that account. So they're going to pay a $34 overdraft fee on top of that. Like this monetary tension that our families have, like you build these stakes that I think everyday families feel all the time.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true. And that's actually what happens, right? And it happened to me. So you would use the card, it would go through because the bank, for some reason, just they let you kind of on a debit card, they let you charge. But then what they'll do is they'll give you a $35, $36. I don't remember what it was. It was many years ago, but $36. The charge itself is $50. And you now have an $85, $86 tab because they process the card. So, yeah. And it's just a wheel that you can't get out.
I remember trying to pay the $50 right afterwards to make sure that I had enough money in there. Of course, the bank back then would rearrange the transactions to make sure that I had enough. This has been proven. We've had Wall Street Journal reporting on this. They'd rearrange the transactions to make sure that I still sunk. You know, Bank of America always said, Michael, that they were there to help as I was digging my hole. They were like providing me bigger and bigger shovels, man.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly what they do. Yeah.
So this tension of being an entrepreneur is there. This tension of there's not enough money. There's not a consistent paycheck. And the need to go back to a consistent paycheck is there. Let's talk about the third elephant in the room. Your book opens. These guys are in this cabin in the middle of nowhere, partway up Mount Hood. There's a tarp on the floor. And, a guy's wielding a gun. So I think we know why there might be a tarp on the floor, just in case there needs to be some cleanup afterwards. Marty, Bo, and another guy, their investor, all tied to these chairs. And there's a Russian mobster. And I thought, wow, this seems like a James Bond movie. Like this is when I first, you know, you opened, this is page one, page two stuff we're talking about, guys. I'm like, wow, this is right out of a James Bond movie. This is not out of a James Bond movie, Michael. There was a Russian mobster incident that you know of, somebody close to you. Something happened?
Yeah. So you're right. The first nine pages, I opened the book with a bang, right? And in the first nine pages, it's basically introduces Marty and Bo. They're two entrepreneurs trying to save their struggling company. They take on a third partner. They should have vetted this guy a little bit more, but he came up with a very clever way to raise capital. And so they go to an investor meeting and they're shanghaied, so to speak, and they're by a Russian mobster who demands that they return $10 million and a mysterious painting of some kind. And to make his point, he kills the third partner. All that happens in the first nine pages of the book.
Which, by the way, and I will give this away, this is a big hook that led me in to this thriller. He's the only guy that knows what the hell's going on.
Exactly.
They kill the guy that knows what's going on.
That was the point. They killed the wrong guy. To make his point, he killed the wrong guy. And the rest of the book is it basically just unpacks then the next 4 days, because the Russian maniac gives him 4 days to find the money in the painting. And so the book basically spends the next 4 days doing that. Yeah. So what happened is that actually something very similar happened to a business partner of mine. So I'd got a call at like, I don't know, was like maybe 1 o'clock in the morning. I was in bed and I had been into being an entrepreneur for about a year. And I had just bought a company from a very small company. It was an art company from this person. And they call me and they says, you got to come over. You got to come over. It's really, really bad. And wouldn't tell me what. So long story short, I end up getting to his house. And I knock on the door and a very large policeman with a very large gun meets me at the door, wants my driver's license, checks my identity, and then lets me in. I'm looking around and he won't tell me what's going on. And then I, you know, well, where's my friend? And I said, he's in the bathroom. And I said, he's in the bathroom. He says, yeah, he won't come out. And so I went, knocked on the door. He opened up the door just a little bit to see who it was. And he lets me in and he is sitting in the toilet and he's just blubbering like a child. His eyes are all swollen. He's been crying for at least several hours. He's just a mess, right? And I'm going, what is going on? What's happened? And he tells me this story about how he owed money to this Russian guy. And that guy had called him up and said, let's come over to my house and we'll talk about it and we'll figure out and we'll negotiate a way that you can pay me back the money that you owe me. And so he goes. And as soon as he knocks on the door, the guy opens the door, puts a gun to his forehead, marches him downstairs into his basement. There's a tarp on the floor and a chair. And there's another guy there, and the guy tapes him to the chair, and then they go kind of torture him in order for him to sign these contracts that they had that would turn over all of his assets, house, motorcycle, cigarette boat, multiple cars, various other different things. And they would put a plastic bag over his head if he didn't agree to do it. And they did that several times till he blacked out. And then he finally started signing all this stuff. When they taped his arm back up, it was over the jacket that he was wearing. And so because of that, he was able to, when they left him unguarded for a while. And he was able to squeeze out and he ran to the neighbors. Oh. And told the neighbors, and the cops came, everybody. And they actually caught him. And the guy is, I think he's still in prison. It was like he was, the trial and the sentence, I think, was 23 years. And that was about 20 years ago. So he's probably still in prison.
Maybe there's another story when the guy gets out. Maybe that's your next book.
I don't know. Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah.
I don't think your friend would want that that written, though.
Yeah. So, well, it was a fascinating story. And I've always carried kind of those images in my head. And that helped to form a lot of the first chapter.
Well, and I know that building stakes is super important. A big question is, you know, you see a lot of authors now that come out of an MFA program or that begin their career as a writer. For you, that is not at all where you began. Let's talk about the process of writing a book. How long have you been wanting to write this book? How long did it take to put together? And how did that all get started?
So that's a good question. I've always wanted to write. I always thought it would be a fun thing. It was literally a bucket list item. And about 10 years ago, a little over 10 years ago, my friend and I, the two characters, Marty and Bo, are strongly associated with my business partner and best friend, Roy, and myself. Not exactly, not 100%, but I drew a significant amount from that. And we were in New York, actually, and we were trying to raise capital for a startup that we had. And we had just gone through a really grueling day of talking to an awful lot of people and pitching and doing all of that. And we were heading back to the hotel, and it was late at night. And my friend said, listen, let's pick up the pace, because I'm not comfortable walking the streets of New York at night. And I was very frustrated and stressed out. And I said, you know what, Roy? I said, right now, if some guy wants to rob me and stick a gun in my face, I'd probably ask him to invest in the company before he pulled the trigger. And Roy starts to laugh just like you. And what happened was that we then ended up getting back to the hotel lobby and we're still joking about it. And Roy says, you know, he said, that would make a really interesting story, wouldn't it? And so we spent the next hour sitting in the lobby bar drinking scotch and coming up with different ideas associated with that story. What would happen if an entrepreneur or two entrepreneurs ended up taking money from the wrong people, right? And so that was, like I said, that was about 10, 12 years ago. And every time I had a moment to myself, whether it be driving or showering or whatever, I would keep adding to that plot. I would just, you know, come up with like a little anecdote that I'd wanted to throw into that plot. And so I developed this plot in my head. It's a little bit like a daydream, if you will, right? I then ended up retiring and I said, you know, I think I'm going to write this down. I've got it floating around in my head for years now, and I think I'm just going to start writing it. And of course, it wasn't working. It didn't work at all because I'd never written a book before. And what happened was that I was taking a walk with my wife one day, and she said, hey, how's that book thing coming for you? And I said, oh, it sucks. It's not working. And she said, why? And I said, well, it's not working. Every time I can't get my thought down on paper where it makes sense. And I've tried it in various different ways. I've tried, you know, third person, past tense, and this and that and whatever, all the jargon that's associated with writing a book. She said, you know, Michael, she said, you're doing it the wrong way. And I said, what do you mean? And she said, well, she said, you're a great storyteller. You've always been a good storyteller. Hell, you go to the grocery store and come back and tell me an entire story about what happened while you were at the grocery store. Right. She said, so stop worrying about writing it and just tell it. Pretend you met a friend that you haven't seen in a long time. And you met him in a bar and you're sitting in a bar and you say, oh, my God, you should hear what happened to me. I said, huh. That's interesting. And I did that and it worked.
Did you take any writing classes? Did you go to meetings? I know in Northeast Texas here, we have a writer's workshop a couple times a year that people can go to, that authors can attend. Did you attend any of these writing functions at all?
No. In fact, that's one of the reasons why I'm so happy that it's won these awards, because I didn't. I just wrote it. I just told the story. So I have no formal training at all.
But it seems to have that same, you know, three-act play kind of structure that a modern tale will have. Do you watch a lot of thriller movies? Do you read a lot of thriller books before this? Because it seems to really, you know, it is highly original, but it still also seems to fit the genre very, very well.
Well, yes, I love movies, right? So I've seen tons of thriller type movies. Do a lot of reading. I've always loved reading. And when I read, I tend to actually love the way words are put together. So it takes me a long time to get sometimes through a book because I will reread sentences because I just love the way the words are structured.
The construction of the sentence. Yeah.
Yeah. And so a lot of people think that's really weird. You know, they'll go, why don't you just read the book? And, you know, you've been on this thing forever. And I go, yeah, but there's this one paragraph and I just keep rereading it because it's so beautiful. And, you know, so yeah, but that's just me. I, you know.
Are you an engineer then by training?
Yeah. My undergraduate's an aerospace engineer.
That just said engineer all over it right there.
Yeah, it does. Doesn't it? Yeah.
But still the beauty. And for me too, like, you know, our fans of our show know how much I like Disney, and I'm not that much into Mickey Mouse or into whatever, but I do like when you go there thinking about like what these people were thinking when they created it, like how that came out, how it sprung from them, which is this wonderful combination of science, process, and creativity, you know, which I think are the ingredients, which leads me to a couple more questions for budding writers out there. Did you outline it first or did you just sit down and write it?
I didn't have to outline it. As I said, I had this entire plot.
Outlines completely.
Or at least
head.
The outline. Yeah, all in my head. Because I'd spent 10 years on it. I wouldn't advise other writers, budding writers, to do that because it takes an awful long time. But as I said, for me, it was just this. It was a little bit of a kind of a little fancy thing that I had in my head, right? So I get bored when I'm driving, et cetera. And this is the time before podcasts and various other different things. I don't do that anymore. I now listen to Stacking Benjamins in my car.
There you go. Stop. Keep going. Stop. Keep going.
Yeah. So I don't, but in the old, you know, in the 10, 15 years ago, you just start daydreaming and you start thinking about different things and different characters and a potential story that you've got floating around in your head. So I didn't have to outline it. I just told the story. Sometimes it does go in different directions. The very first draft, the very first manuscript that I kind of put forward, and I let my wife read it. And I let my two kids read it because I didn't trust anyone else. And my wife said, she said, honey, there are no women in this book. It's all about men. I think you need to have some female characters. My daughter said, Dad, the Marty character who's clearly based on you, I think he needs a little bit more stress. I think life's a little perfect for him already. And as a result, I introduced Abby, the wife, into the book. I also introduced Natalia, who you don't know yet. She's later in the book. I then rewrote it with different characters to make it a little bit more robust.
It's interesting that you say that because it's very easy for people to write from just their point of view. And I think that's an author's journey is fleshing that out. I'm just thinking of there's a middle grade fiction book that I have 99% finished. And then I realized that the best friend of the main character needs to be a girl. And it's a boy. It's told her, but it totally makes a book better by a long shot if his best friend is this girl. So now I have to rewrite the Duffy character as a girl. And I got to that point, Michael, maybe 6 years ago, and just went, that's just a bridge too far right now in my life. So it's sitting there 99% of the way done for this major rewrite, but a great thing. But that brings up the next thing, which is when I wrote my half of Stacked, you know, the money book that I co-wrote, I set myself a word count goal every day to just get it out. Like, how did you actually accomplish the writing? Did you set a word count goal? Did you try to write a chapter at a time? Because I know writer's block comes up and procrastination comes up for every writer. Like, how did you fight those things?
So really, really good question. I didn't worry about words at the beginning because remember, it started out as this is just a hobby.
Yeah.
You know, I'm retiring and I need something to do because I spent my entire life getting up in the morning and putting on a uniform, meaning, you know, work clothes and going to work. Right. And even to this day, I'm writing the sequel right now and I leave the house. I can't do this at home. I leave the house and I go to a coffee shop. I actually put it in the acknowledgments. There were two coffee shops, one in Charlevoix, Michigan, and one in Portland, Oregon. And I would go there every morning. They knew me. They had my coffee waiting for me. And I sit there and I write for, you know, 6, 7, 8 hours, depending on how I feel. I didn't worry about the word count or any of that. I just, and writer's block is definitely something that you have to wrestle with. But I wasn't worried about it at the beginning. And then once it started to kind of become real, that the hobby started becoming something that was, you know, legitimate and people were going to be reading this, not just me, then I started worrying about getting it done. And that's when I would then say, okay, I'm not leaving here today, meaning the coffee shop, for, you know, until I write at least 500 words or something like that.
Yeah. I like having some type of a structured approach like that to get it done. It's interesting to see a hobby turn into a business to some degree, you know? And even though it sounds like you're not worried about money and making money from the book, but treating it in a business-like manner where you've got a structure to your day.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And in fact, to be really honest with you, if I didn't have this, I would probably die an early death. I'm one of those people that I can't just sit. Let me digress for a moment. So there was a period of my life. I left Intel, was an entrepreneur for about a year with a startup that I started while I was at Intel, which blew up, as I said. I then went into kind of deep retirement because I'd gotten sick, overworked, and had some medical problems. And so for about a year, I didn't do much. I just kind of, you know, I enjoyed the retirement before the Intel stock started to crater, okay? And I would find myself becoming this vegetable. I sometimes I wouldn't even get out of bed till like 10 or 11 o'clock. I'd hang out in my bathrobe till 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. It was pathetic. It was really sad. And so I realized that here I was in my late 40s, early 50s, and I was acting like I was in my 80s. You know, I actually started really to dislike myself. Now, I went back to work. I became an entrepreneur, blah, 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 blah. But even now, after I am officially retired, if I went back to that, if I didn't have something to get me up in the morning and go and do something, I would probably just become a vegetable. So
it is fascinating, though. I mean, our friend Wes Moss wrote a book about what the happiest retirees know, and it's all about purpose, Michael. It is all about having this purpose and thing that you're different than you were at Intel. And I think this idea of not chasing something is rejecting, I think, the human condition, you know, and who we really are at our heart. I want to ask one more thing, which is about the coffee shop. Because I believe that's where you and Doug fortuitously met, I think, was at the coffee shop. But it's funny, yeah. This idea of background noise and creation. I work from Mom's basement, and there is an app that goes on my browser called Coffitity, and it makes the noise of a coffee shop. And what's fascinating is when I have this hum going behind me, I become a machine and I can do tons and tons and tons of work. I turn that Coffitity app off and it's dead silent here. I get nothing done. You find the coffee shop actually makes you more creative and spit out work?
We are 100% alike in that respect. That is exactly what I need. I need the white noise. Here's another small anecdote. So when I was, even back when I was going to school, and I would get ready for finals. A lot of people would go to the library to study, or they would study in their dorm room. I didn't. I went to the student union, which was like this giant cafeteria, right? And I would literally sit there from like 7 o'clock in the morning while the kids were coming in and eating breakfast, and then they were having their coffee and all their meetings and all the way till 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon studying for my finals, because I needed the energy. I needed the noise. And you're right. If it's dead quiet, my mind starts to wander. I do everything but concentrate, right? Oh, look, there's a shiny little object over there. What is that? And oh, whatever happened to this? You know, whatever. It's, oh, look, there's this magazine. I haven't looked at that magazine in years. So you get my point. It just becomes crazy. And I need that. And so what I do is I go to a coffee shop. And thank God, there's a couple of coffee shops, because if you think about it, other than Starbucks, if you go to a regular coffee shop, they're going to kick you out, because they're not going to enjoy, because they make their money churning tables, right? So the last thing they want is some guy who's going to nurse a cup of coffee for the next 5 hours, right? And it's like, you want to buy something, sir? And that's a real problem. So there are these two coffee shops that I found. One is in Portland, which was Jola, and they were just wonderful. They was large enough. And yes, they serve food and all that, and they did make money off of that, but they didn't mind because they were large enough that I could sit there and they got to know me and et cetera. And then here in Charlevoix, it's a coffee shop that makes money not off their tables, but off of all the other stuff, the maple syrup and stuff that they buy. And so they have no problem with me sitting again for literally 6-7 hours, nursing this one or two cups of coffee. I'll get a refill every once in a while. It's like, okay, well, there's another buck you're willing to spend. So, but yeah, I need the noise. I need the noise.
Well, I didn't know there were coffee shops in Portland, Oregon. That surprises me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you have to look for them, but you'll find them.
Yeah. Just turn a corner and you'll find it.
Exactly.
The book is Chasing Money. It is a tightly woven tale of greed, deception, and treachery. It says right on the front cover. I am 3 chapters in and I cannot wait to finish this book. And Doug has already read it and has said that this is definitely a thriller we need to read. And you can tell it's not just Doug and me, the awards that this book has won, including the Best Indie Book Award. Congratulations, by the way, Mike, on the success. And thanks for helping our stackers know what it takes to maybe put words on paper and do the thing that you've been dreaming about forever. It's a great thing.
Well, thank you very much for having me. By the way, I'm almost done with the sequel. So if it's as good as the first one, please invite me back.
Absolutely. Will do, man. Thank you.
It's also about money.
Oh, fabulous. Well, even better. Come on back. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm Liz, the chief mom officer. And when I'm not busy being the breadwinner of my family of five, I'm stacking Benjamins.
Oh, gee, are you writing, starting up thinking about writing the next great American fiction novel? Sitting alongside Michael Balter at the coffee shop?
I will be happy to read, more precisely listen to, the next great American crime novel when they bring it to a movie.
Very seriously.
And then I can watch it.
You it's the laziest thing anybody has ever said.
I can't even bother with the audiobook. I'm not going to go listening.
That's where we thought he was going. He's like, nope, you need to shove it in my face.
As long as it comes with buttered popcorn. Actually, I don't even like popcorn. Peanut M&Ms and cherry coke.
Doug, you've read this book, though, and it reads like a movie.
I have it. I bought it.
This book is so fun. It takes you along on such a ride. There's some great hit. I don't think you've gotten to this part yet, Joe, but you get deep into some like art history. This is a great ride. It kind of takes you halfway across the world. This is a movie. If this doesn't get made into a movie, somebody's missing the boat in Hollywood.
Also got to say, it hit close to home. And what? When he was talking with me about
in this book, Joe, what?
What's that?
Yeah. How does this hit close to home? I'm a little worried.
No, that part didn't hit close to home. The fact that he added, you know, the character who is like his wife doubting his career once or twice in my career.
It might have come up at the dinner table. What's your job going to be when you grow up, Dad?
My spouse may have doubted my what color's my parachute direction. It may have happened. Big thanks to Michael.
Yeah. You know, the book was so good that almost immediately after it came out and it got these awards, like as soon as it hit the streets, the publisher asked him for a sequel right away, which never happens to an author who writes their very first book. And he got like had that hit album and the band was like, what do? We don't have any more material. He got to write a sequel right away because it got so popular. So
did you hear him though? He sounds super excited about it. I can't wait.
Oh yeah. Why wouldn't you be?
I'm excited for him. And frankly, having that type of a quote retirement where you wake up every day, cause you've got this big thing that you're working on and it's sitting at a coffee shop, right?
Yeah.
And type it away. I mean, what a fun, I don't know, hobby. What do you call it? OG?
Avocation.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe that's it. I have been curious, OG, because, you know, you've joked about your retirement before, but that means that you've thought about, you and I have been working together for a long time, and I've never asked you, like, for you, what's the after thing? What's the thing you do when you're done financial planning?
Oh, during retirement time, huh? You know, that's always the question, right? Is it's not the same that it was when two generations ago or even one generation ago. You have to have something that you've got to look forward to. My grandfather worked until he was 92. He owned a printing company and every day he went to work. I mean, he wasn't working. He wasn't, you know, slaving over the presses and, you know, lifting cartons of paper, you know, in his 90s, but he was there and that was his, you know, that was part of his purpose. So I think you run the risk of going, sweet. And that's the thing that we talk about with the FIRE movement. It's like, yeah, you retire, you know, when you're 48 and you're like, woohoo, look me, I'm retired. I got all this money. And then it's like, well, now what? All your buddies are still at work. You know, even if you want, you can't just be like, hey, let's go. Yeah, Doug and I were talking about skiing. Like it's great snow skiing still up in the mountains with all the fresh April snow. It's like, I got kids. I can't just be like, hey guys, skip school. I know you're a junior in high school and the AP tests are in 2 weeks, but come on, let's go skiing. You know, you have to kind of factor in real life on top of that. So it's a fun thing to start considering. And plus, why the heck am I getting all the pushback on retirement? You two are the old guys in this group.
What did you, wait a minute.
Just lashing out now.
Oh, I'm the angry pre-retiree. I don't want to be a pre-retiree. I'm 40 for God's sake.
Did you hear the big
in my 40s?
Did you hear the big deflect there, Doug? Yeah.
In my 40s.
Deflect.
Mid-40s.
So you really got to think about this. It's super important. Why am I getting all the heat?
Yeah.
Sir, was that a non-answer? Hey, none of your business.
You guys suck.
Look over there.
If you retired tomorrow, what's the first thing you'd do?
Change my phone number.
No longer going to be on a podcast.
Oh my God, that's the best answer.
It's like, I talk to my brother a lot, and my brother's like, what would you do if you won the Powerball? And I'm like, this is super easy. The answer is like literally, we're sorry, the number you've called is no longer in service. It cannot be reached at this time. Goodbye. It's like, poof, vanish is what I would do.
Smoke trail behind you.
There was a person that, Joe, you and I knew who won the Powerball. You may remember this story, who was an advisor. She and her husband won the Powerball, and literally they packed a suitcase and vanished for a year.
Wow.
They just were, it's like, did you guys ever know what happened to someone who, like, I don't know, called her assistant from the road and said, hire somebody, pack up the house, sell it, store our stuff. We'll come and get it some other time. Like literally vanished to like escape from all the chaos that was about to happen.
Well,
pretty smart move, all things considered, you know, knowing that, also, you got $1 billion in the bank. You know, you got to do that.
We're already halfway there, but time to wander out on the back porch. We'll come back to the Better Call Saul segment on Wednesday of this week. But Doug, what's going on here at the end of the show? Let's talk some community.
Yeah, well, you know, we haven't done this in a little while, so I want to talk about a couple of reviews that have just hit the internets about us.
People being nice. Thank you.
Well, you're assuming they're being nice?
Of course.
Wow, it's gutsy.
Why would you give us a negative review?
Well, I'm going to start this one off, and it's going to be a bit of a thrill ride for you. You're not going to be sure where it's going. Be warned, this is, see, right away, you're like, you had me at be warned. This is some awesome informal conversation on this podcast.
Stick
with it. All of it is great information that is given in a relatable way. Honestly, it feels like Joe, OG, and Paula, WTF, and others are my good friends, even though I've never met them. I have learned so much from this podcast about financial decisions and their impact on my life. It's like I'm not even in the room some days.
That is very nice. Thank you.
But be warned.
And that is specifically our goal is to make it. You know, I've really loved this new book by Catherine Price. Not that new. She also has a TED Talk. If you watch Catherine Price's TED Talk about the power of fun, she talks about fun as the number one way to learn. And people think, no, I want to be serious. I want a serious career. I want a serious vocation. I want to take my life seriously. Catherine's huge thing, and I'm 100% on board. We got to get Catherine on the show. But is that if you seek connection, the flow state, and approach things with a sense of playfulness, you will achieve all those things. You will take your life more seriously. You will be involved more. You will have this existence you wake up and you get excited about. I mean, you could hear the sense of playfulness in Michael Balter today. Holy cow.
Yeah,
that dude for is. Sure. That dude's super happy. That's wonderful.
And you know, something we haven't said in years on this show, I'm amazed it still keeps coming up from stackers who call in to the Better Call Saul Life, you know, helpline, or even in reviews, they'll say, I didn't learn anything. We used to joke about that like 5 or 8 years ago. It's been so long since we said that because we wanted you to learn on this show without realizing you're learning, right? We're going to have so much fun talking about this big stuff.
Just play.
You're not going to, we're just playing and you're not going to realize you're learning something. And yet people still use that phrase.
Forever.
We're like, no, stop.
We had it last week with caller Nick, remember?
Yeah,
I haven't learned a thing.
And we do want you to learn. We just don't want you to realize you're learning. It's a whole Karate Kid thing. Wax on, wax off.
Well, it's very nice. Thank you. Who gave us that review?
Oh, sorry. Did not say that. That was somebody who doesn't know how to hide their identity very well on the internet. That's Heather45VT. So if you need to find her, it's somebody named Heather who's 45 years old in Vermont. That's my internet sleuthing right there.
That's what she wants you to think. It really is Bill in Nevada who's 26.
Who would ever misrepresent themselves on the internet?
Hides behind that. Guys, I do have a review. The other thing we do on the back porch is we review some fun stuff that we found or stuff that's not fun, man. That discussion last week about poor things. As I'm on TikTok looking for new segments for the show, either brilliance or air quotes brilliance, I came across this. You guys remember like the old 70s albums that maybe, you know, parents, heck, for some of you, grandparents had? and you look at these cheesy covers and you listen to the music and you're like, either, wow, they don't make music like that anymore. If you're older, if you're younger, you're like, thank God they don't make music like that anymore.
You just described OG's entire collection of ABBA.
Exactly. Old Barry Manilow covers. Some of these folk albums.
Don't you besmirch Barry Manilow's name.
Oh, but you're going to love this, Doug. There is a TikTok channel that's fairly new called Obscurest Vinyl. And it has these phenomenal 1970s covers. And then they play a piece of some of these super obscure songs. I'm going to play a couple of these. Listen to this. This is looks like a folk song. It says timeless folk music, acoustic vintage vibes. Listen to how 70s this is.
I'm just daydreaming about taking a huge dump and getting up. Piss on the dump, cut the dump in half.
What?
I got a strong stream, dump don't stand a chance. When I'm gone, I give it a fudge, say a prayer, pull up my pants.
What are you doing?
This is the best channel. This channel is supposedly, look at this album cover. It's just a guy staring off into the other way. It's a dude staring off into the distance. And then they are not real, obviously, not real songs. This is another one that's a 70s, a disco you guys might remember. Here's some 70s disco. Check out this album cover while we're playing it. But my colon don't care. I understand you just bought the new sofa, but my colon.
My understanding is that TikTok and Instagram and these things are largely driven by what your previous searches have been. Or what you linger on.
I don't have all the details worked out, but I'm pretty sure. I'm
pretty sure that, you know, if you're getting fart jokes in your TikTok, I got beat. You have somebody that will erase your search history, like if you get hit by a bus, right?
You gotta have your ride or die. Somebody needs to be lined up. It used to be, here's where I stashed my porn. Now it's who's clearing my search history.
Oh, that Larry David episode?
Yeah.
Did you see the automation that somebody created for their Apple device? You know, you can do all these automations, right? Like when I'm 2 minutes from my house, turn on the front porch light. You know, you can do all these automations. And somebody created an automation that said, when my heart rate is less than 5 on my Apple Watch, clear browser history.
And that might be the best tip we give you today. It's
like, automate Apple Watch less than 5 heart rate. It's time to.
But Doug, you've got 3 more big takeaways. What are they?
So what's stacked up on our to-do list today? First, take some advice from Michael Balter. Have a book in you or some other project? Go do it. You can't create something fantastic that the world wants to see unless you begin. Second, 31% interest rate from Lowe's or a Robinhood gold card? Don't work in a horrible ecosystem just because it's what you've always done or because one piece of a bad deal looks good. The apple is still rotten even if the worm is on a different side than you're currently looking at. Kind of had to think through that one, don't you? But the biggest to do? I gotta find a country that'll put my face on their money. Maybe Vietnam. Then people can earn Doug Dong. I bet that'd help their economy. Thanks to Michael Balter for joining us today. Be sure to head to your local bookshop and pick up a copy of Chasing Money today. Don't have one of those cute little bookshops in your town? Okay, then we'll allow you to head to one of those giant online resellers. We'll also include links in our show notes at stackingbenjamins.com. This show is the property of SB Podcasts, LLC, copyright 2024, and is created by Joe Saul-Sehy.
Our producer is Karen Repine. Karen and Joe get help from a few of our neighborhood friends. You'll find out about our awesome team at StackingBenjamins.com, along with the show notes and how you can find us on YouTube and all the usual social media spots. Come say hello. Oh yeah, and before I go, not only should you not take advice from these nerds, don't take advice from people you don't know. This show is for entertainment purposes only. Before making any financial decisions, speak with a real financial advisor. I'm Joe's mom's neighbor, Doug, and we'll see you next time back here at the Stacking Benjamin Show. I'll be back right after I show Joe's mom my new stovepipe hat. This might be my new look. Hey, they're right. Mom, they're right. Black really is a slimming color.
To pay for the Civil War.
Mm-hmm. Take that out, Steve.